Welcome to the Mumbrellacast, sponsored by SeeRadioDifferently.com. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Robin Hicks. This week,
Dirty Harry, Detroit, and football.
It's halftime in America, too.
John Butler versus John Stamos.
We catch up on Starcom.
Can media agencies be innovative?
The first TV show of the year is cancelled before rating season even begins.
The highs and lows of the new magazine circulations.
With us today in the studios of CBS Interactive, podcast regular Bob Gooch, Managing Director of Starcom Sydney. Hey, Bob.
Hi, good to be here again.
And podcast producer Colin Delaney.
Hello, as always.
Now, Bob, welcome back. Let's start with Starcom. What's new for 2012 with you guys?
What's new? Well, I guess it's a continuation of what we've been doing in 2011. We come off the back of what was probably one of our most successful years as far as our product was concerned. We won more awards in 2011 than we've ever done before. I think we've introduced some new ways of working, which have been extremely successful. So, and we're also looking to, I guess, continue to expand in areas which are important, such as digital analytics, content, and certainly looking at Liquid Thread, which is our content specialist division, growing that a lot more as well. So those are the areas that we're going to be specialising in.
Okay, a couple of points on that. So the awards, I think you did okay at the MFA Awards.
We did,
last
indeed,
time
around. Yeah, but globally as well, we continue to do extremely well. Within the Starcom world, Australia is recognised as the most successful of all the offices. So we continue to do well within the Starcom network.
And is that some
well?
Kind of key case studies which have driven the awards success? I seem to remember, I can't remember if it was this year, or if it was the year just gone or the year before that, was a lot of stuff around Pedigree or something?
Yeah. So Pedigree was a successful entry for us, the dog adoption. So areas like that, which I think just continue to demonstrate that traditional categories can be looked at in a very different way. And we've come up with some really innovative sort of solutions, which has really pushed the boundaries in that space, I think. So.
And the other point you mentioned was Liquid Thread, which
yes.
I don't know much about, actually.
Okay, well, Liquid Thread is our content division. It's about taking brands and finding a way to, I guess, extend the brand story across both social media and digital. So that's an area, as I say, which is going to continue to grow. We've just employed our first executive producer, which is a lady called Judy Duff. So she's on board now. And as I say, that's a space that's only going to continue to grow.
And what background does she come from?
She's an executive TV producer. So she's worked in networks for BBC, various other sort of areas. So she comes with great sort of great skill and recognition in that space.
And this is actually making the stuff yourself? I mean, you literally do it in-house?
We will be looking at...
Yeah,
look, I mean, in some cases we might be doing it in-house, but otherwise we will be doing it, you know, externally as well. But she will be guiding us down that track, so, yeah.
You mentioned content production. I remember when you were last on the show, you talked about people at Starcom having the word creative in their title.
Yeah.
Is that something that you're looking to develop further in 2012?
Well, you know, when you say creative, that doesn't necessarily mean making ads. It means
right.
the fact that everyone is entitled to be creative. So it's looking at creative solutions, etc. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think every agency is now looking at the type of people they employ. So we're looking at bringing people into the agency who brings different skill sets from the traditional media agency's skill set, if you like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, creative means not only creatively making ads, but creatively coming up with ideas.
Yeah. So where would they sit within the agency?
Well,
would they be in the content production team or?
Look, they sit within, if you like, you know, Liquid Thread, we say, sits on the shoulders of media. So when we have something which we call our experience creation framework. So when someone is developing an idea, part of that might be a content-led idea. And that's when we will bring our specialists in from Liquid Thread to talk about how we can actually make that happen. So...
Okay, and I suppose the other big event, certainly if you were to Google Starcom on the trade press in the last few months, is the global loss of GM,
yeah.
which has ramifications for you with Holden, which is the local version of GM. What's that meant for the agency?
Look, it's frustrating. I mean, you know, unfortunately, global accounts, these things happen. You know, sometimes you're on the upside of winning global business, other times you're on the downside. That's something which, unfortunately, we can't control in this country. We had a fantastic relationship with the local client.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I remember a while back, you know, sort of there was a kind of trade press lunch, and I remember just that it came across the agency was really proud of also how well they'd supported Holden during the downturn when Holden was having difficulties as well. That, you know, regardless of it being a global, it's still got to hurt a little bit.
It hurts just purely because you have a very close relationship with the individuals, and I think the local client would be the first to admit that they had a great relationship with the guys working on the business down there. It's really unfortunate. You know, life goes on. We will, within the next week or so, we'll be announcing 5 new wins that we've already had for this year. So, you know, as I say, it's part of our business, unfortunately. We wish them well, and I know they wish us well. So,
the reported billing for Holden was about $57 million Australian. Obviously, that's a big chunk. Would that mean that people would have to leave the agency, or were the five wins that you've picked up, were they sort of...
Yeah, there's no loss of agency personnel. No,
right,
no.
Right, okay. Another development was reported in the Australian Financial Review this week, that Aegis has shifted some of its forward commitment from 9 to 10. What do you make of that?
Look, I guess they look at their client base, they think what's right for their clients, and they will make decisions based on that. I think the reality is that there's going to be a lot of competition, I think, between 10 and 9 this year. So, yeah, maybe that's why they've done it. But, yeah, I can't say why they've personally done it.
It's probably, I'm guessing it's probably since you were last in that James Warburton was appointed, then had a long break. And obviously he's now started now. What are you expecting to see in terms of differences with him at the helm? Will it change the trading relationship in some way, do you think?
Personally, I think it's great that James is back on board. I think you need people like James in the business. I think he stirs things up. He knows how to make changes, make people listen. I mean, the fact that he's already made changes at 10 with Mike Morrison coming on board, I think, you know, that surprised people potentially. But, you know, I think it's good for the business. It's good to have someone who's strong, who knows, you know what needs to be done.
Mike Morrison is leading the sales efforts.
Yes, he's the new chief sales officer down there.
And what are your early impressions of him in that role?
I think he's going to be fine, absolutely. I think, again, it's another example of how the world is moving. You know, not only are agencies looking to expand the type of people that they're employing, but sales houses are equally doing the same. So I think you're going to see more and more that sales operations are going to bring people in who aren't traditional salespeople, because the reality of the world is they're not just selling 30-second spots anymore. They need to be smart in the conversations they're having. So Mike, I think, is going to be good for the business.
And when it comes to the sort of fairly complicated relationships between the three networks and the media agencies, over the next year, year or two, are we just going to see a direct correlation between ratings and commercial success, or is it going to be a bit more complicated than that, do you think?
I think it's going to be more complicated. I think the reality of the world, again, is moving on, that ratings are a benchmark and they're always going to be important, but it goes much deeper than that as well. So you're going to start looking at a much deeper understanding and involvement with the audience. And so, you know, you can take something like The Biggest Loser, which is doing around 700,000 viewers at the moment, and people might say, wow, that's really down. But that's 700,000 viewers who are dedicated to that program, who, as I say, are in the mindset where they want to watch it. So advertisers who, you know, can relate much more to that audience than they can necessarily a 2 million audience where there's going to be a lot of wastage, if you like. So it's going to be, I think, about programs having a much closer connection with their audience.
And does the demo still come into it? Is the demo still in?
Well, I think it comes down to an understanding of the consumer. I mean, we talk demos, you know, around this room, we can, you know, range from, you know, 18 to 55-year-olds, you know, and we're all very different people within that. Just because you're a certain age doesn't mean to say that you have to act in a certain way. So, again, if you like, what Starcom does more and more now is that, you know, we're all about understanding human beings much better. And that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, it's understanding what is important to an individual and what is actually going to make them go away and do something positive as far as a brand is concerned. So you're going to be looking at programs and you're going to be looking at audiences that actually make your customer do something. And that, as I say, I think that's how the world is going to change.
That reminds me very much of maybe a few years ago now, and might be outdated, but the Starcom positioning around the word intent, as in the customer sort of being predisposed to act, having seen a TV programme? Yeah. Or is that still very much the mantra of Star Trek?
Yeah, look, it's all part of what we do. As I say, it's about, I guess we call ourselves a human experience agency, which on one level can sound a little bit, what are you talking about? But taking it to the most simple form, it's about understanding customers better than anybody else. Because the reality is, at the end of the day, this is real time. The way people react to a brand now, it's instant. And you have to be able to react quickly to how people are doing that. So it's about having that understanding. So if you're watching The Biggest Loser or if you're watching My Kitchen Rules, what is going to actually make you do something other than just watching it and actually interact with the brand? So that's going to be much more important. So having those metrics and working with, I guess the media who understand more about their audiences and what they do is going to become more important. So ratings continue to be a benchmark, obviously important, but this market sometimes gets obsessed with who's number one and who's, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, it doesn't, we don't buy all people anyway, so it's irrelevant.
I was going to ask, actually, with Starcom's client base, is there a particular network where the demos are the kind of shows they're doing and the demos that you're clients are particularly interested in? Is there a network that yours might skew towards than the general population?
We're lucky that we've got a client base that encompasses many different sort of, if you want to say demographics, whatever. No, I mean, there's no one station. And the truth is, the way we consume media now, you're not a Channel 9 consumer. You're not a Channel 7 consumer. You're not a Channel 10 consumer. You watch programs. You watch things which are interesting. And I've just come back from the UK, actually, and it was interesting over there how very much, something that's happening there is the catch-up TV ratings and the fact that, if you look at the regular top 10 programs, week, 2 weeks later, that can change completely because catch-up TV, online, blah, blah, blah. So nowadays, people don't have to watch programs live.
Although we're only adding about maybe 10%, aren't we?
But it's going to grow, mate. I mean, the reality is that's growing all the time. And I think, when I have conversations around the office or with clients, more and more people are watching programming when it suits them. They're not necessarily watching it live anymore. So that live audience obviously is still going to be extremely important. But again, it's understanding that it just doesn't end there. The life of a program actually is extending.
Doesn't that make the life of the media buyer extremely difficult? Yes. I mean, for a good example, I think, is The Straits, the debut of The Straits on ABC, which ratings were disappointing, but Twitter was ablaze people talking about the show.
Yeah.
And so this disconnect between a show rating poorly and what actually people are saying about it.
Yeah.
And so how does a media buyer go about accounting for what's being said on Twitter?
Well, that again, it's a whole new world. So understanding social media and what's happening in that space is becoming more important for us again. So we're looking at getting specialists in that space who understand what's going on there as well.
Yes.
And again, I think you're going to start looking at programs which have more of a social side to it as well. And one of the things that's happening again in the UK, having just been over there, there's a lot of programs now, new game shows, which are very much about driving people online and actually, interacting with the program online. And in some cases, you're actually getting better results by what's happening off the traditional broadcast screen and what's actually happening online. So I think you're going to be looking at that more and more.
And just speaking of Straits, Colin, I think you saw that. What were your early impressions? Because it had very mixed, as Robin's saying, it had very mixed commentary on social media.
Yeah, it was a two-hour opener, two-hour special, and I thought it was great. I was really looking forward to it. I'd seen the trailer, and the trailer's quite violent, and I spoke with Penny Chapman, who's the creative director of Matchbox Pictures, who made it, and she was saying that it was all about the ABC were really up for it because it was going to bring back young men to the ABC, and I think it will do that. A lot of the... So there were lots of compliments, but then also a lot of comments saying that the acting was a bit shoddy, which, at times there was. Not Brian Cox, not, the Scottish Braveheart guy, but a few others.
Was he in Braveheart?
He was in Braveheart, yeah.
Was he one of the baddies?
I think he was Mel's dad, possibly. but yes, not the scientist.
But, it's interesting now, isn't it, when you see all the trailers for programmes, there's all the Twitter comments next to it now. So gone are the days where the Sydney Morning Herald said, this is brilliant, it's now Twitter hash, blah, blah, blah.
I always
think
that it's when someone's absolutely desperate, though, and they can't find a regular... Yeah. Commentator to say something nice, then they turn to Twitter.
But it's interesting as well. I was listening to something the other day. Noel Fielding, the English comedian.
Yes, the one from The Mighty Boosh.
Yeah, he's just launched a new show in the UK. And there's been this huge Twitter reaction to it from a lot of the, you know, his old fans who are saying it's not what we thought, blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, there's a real danger of reacting quickly to what's been said on Twitter, and that there are certain programs which need time to settle in and you can't react, blah, blah, blah. So
Ben Elton again, possibly could have done with some time.
But this is the interesting thing now. The fact, as I say, we talk about real time. People are going to react to programs in the social space much quicker now than they ever did. So in the same way we talk to our clients about people talking about their brands in real time, so it is for the networks now, where they have to deal with this so-called social outrage or, you know, whatever it may be about a certain program. And how much do you take that seriously, and how much do you actually allow a program to actually find its feet? And as we were saying before we started doing all this, people on Twitter occasionally feel that they can be more outspoken about things than they really are. You know, so you've got to get that balance right.
Which is fine maybe for a reality show, which can jump right in. Yeah. But I think if you're looking for something like The Slap or The Straits, where you're trying to build characters,
absolutely,
and there's a, you know,
absolutely,
or something like Breaking Bad, where yeah, it starts relatively mellow,
yeah,
and then just blows up into something even yeah, bigger. I mean, the networks are going to have a lot of confidence.
And I suppose the other thing is, for the ABC, you don't want them to do well anyway, do you? You want them to do as badly as possible.
Well, you know, come to Revolution, when there's advertising everywhere, then it's fine, isn't it? But, yeah. But, you know, that's the challenge, though, not just for the ABC, is how do you get young people watching TV?
Bundy Rum and KFC made it into the Straits, boxes and
did
buckets
they?
Of, so
that won't happen
maybe
again,
that's where you...
Next, Aegis launches its innovation unit.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones.
Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves.
Check out the case study for Nissan Microcitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
This week, media buying group Aegis launched a business unit designed to drive innovation within the group. It's called Jump Tank, and it will service the clients of Aegis agencies Mitchells, Cara, MPG and the newly relaunched Visium, as well as the agencies themselves. So a quote from Christian Barnes, former MD of MPG, who will run Jump Tank. He said, "We believe no other marketing group in this region has a core team committed to constantly finding new and better ways to deliver innovation, from our business practices to the strategies and campaigns that we develop for our clients. In this constantly changing market," bit of a mouthful there. So
did he really say all of that? Or?
Well, yeah. So
he certainly did in the press release.
Carefully worded press release from Access PR, I believe it was. So a few umbrella readers felt the quotes were full of jargon, surprisingly, and unsure what Jump Tank would actually do, what its reason for being was. So, Bob, what are your initial what's your initial response to Jump Tank?
Look, in principle, I can see why they're doing it. It makes perfect sense. You know, these are all areas that we have to start looking at. And, you know, there's always the danger that you were saying some of your, you know, bloggers were talking about jargon and things like that. It's very hard when you try and talk through what it is you're actually trying to do. But the reality is we all have to find ways of being more innovative. We all have to find ways of as we were just talking about, how we engage in this, you know, real-time world these days. So can certainly see why they've done that. I think every agency is doing the same thing, though. It's not that they are unique in doing that. They're unique in the sense that they're putting a press release out talking about it. But I think, you know, everything we do is about innovation. That's why we've got things like Liquid Thread. That's why we've got digital analysts. That's why we're looking at social space, et cetera, et cetera. We're all doing that.
You say that Liquid Thread sits on the shoulders
of media. Yeah.
Of media. Is that what Jump Tank is doing?
I kind of, yeah. I mean, the way you've just described that to me, that sounds like they're going to be sitting above everybody and they will be called in when and if they are required, yeah.
Like a SWAT team.
Yeah.
I mean, innovation is, I think, the one thing that sets media agencies aside from creative agencies. Being closer to technology, being abreast of new trends, close to consumer behaviour, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But with Jump Tank, it's obviously feeding the various agencies with these innovative new ideas. But who's going to pay for it?
Well, ultimately, they will be asking clients to pay for it. I mean, that's the reality of the world these days, is that, and you know, media agencies, I guess, have been guilty in the past of giving everything away. And the fact is, as you've just said, you know, we are probably the owners of more information and knowledge about what's happening with customers, with consumers, blah, 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 than anybody, that we've got to get better at actually setting that as an important part of what we do. So there will be, you know, you pass those costs on to clients by demonstrating that you're adding value.
Yeah.
Bob, there are some that would argue that media agencies should get on with buying and leave the innovation to the creative agencies.
That would be creative agencies saying that.
It would.
Yeah. Funny that, yeah.
But what would you,
the reality is, you know, what is media buying these days? I mean, the fact is, and you know, I know we're going to talk about the Super Bowl in a little while, and what have you. You've got great creative ideas, et cetera, et cetera. You can make the best ad in the world. But the truth is, if it's not being seen in the right place at the right time with the right people, then what's the point? And as we've said before, we are the people who will hopefully tell you where you can, you know, place that ad when you've invested all that money in great, you know, creativity, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's not, you know, that's, you know, with all due respect, that's a very old sort of, you know, saying, you know, stick to what you do. The reality is the world demands, marketers demand more help in understanding what they're doing with their advertising dollars in their marketing world than ever before. And it's true, media agencies are the ones who have actually invested the money to better understand what's happening in that space.
So a starting point of this conversation was obviously Jump Tank, which is yet another sort of part of the kind of tie into the Aegis network. We've also seen this week as well Visual Jazz, which is the old Mitchell's digital agency, now tie up just today with
Isobar.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So now remind me, is it Visual Jazz Isobar or Isobar Visual Jazz that they're calling it?
Visual Jazz Isobar.
Which is snappy. What's your impression from sort of stepping back, looking at, you know, clearly this is a competitor agency.
Sure.
At least in Sydney, it's practically a next door neighbour agency as well.
Yeah. Our coffee shop's very crowded now, let me say.
Yes, I imagine there must be. Have you ever tried to put a coffee on their account?
You're giving me ideas now. Yeah.
What's your? I guess we're a year getting on for a year or so since the merger. What's your impression as a competitor? Are they where you would have expected them to be? Are they still a feared competitor in pitches, for instance?
Well, of course they are. I mean, you know, they are a big organisation, so you've got to respect them for what they do. And I think, you know, by what you're seeing with all these announcements, they are relaunching themselves. They're evolving into where they feel they have to be. So naturally, you have to respect what they do. Yeah.
Next, Dirty Harry and the Super Bowl.
This week, the Super Bowl took place. Between the New York Giants winning and Madonna's halftime show was the world's most expensive and, of course, talked about ad slots. As Coke had play-by-play variations in their polar bear ads, Budweiser partied through the decade, and Doritos, as usual, let their fans choose which ad to run. One of the most talked about ads starred Clint Eastwood for Chrysler. Let's take a listen.
It's halftime. Both teams are in their locker room discussing what they can do to win this game in the second half. It's halftime in America, too. People are out of work and they're hurting. And they're all wondering what they're going to do to make a comeback. And we're all scared because this isn't a game. The people of Detroit know a little something about this. They almost lost everything. But we all pull together. Now Motor City is fighting again. I've seen a lot of tough eras, a lot of downturns in my life, and times when we didn't understand each other. It seems that we've lost our heart at times. The fog of division, discord, and blame made it hard to see what lies ahead. But after those trials, we all rallied around what was right and acted as one. Because that's what we do. We find a way through tough times, and if we can't find a way, then we'll make one. All that matters now is what's ahead. How do we come from behind? How do we come together? And how do we win? Detroit's showing us it can be done. And what's true about them is true about all of us. This country can't be knocked out with one punch. We get right back up again, and when we do, the world's going to hear the roar of our engines. Yeah, it's halftime, America, and our second half's about to begin.
Now, that Clint ad had already more than 4.4 million views on YouTube. Obviously, that's nothing on the 111 million or so in the US who are actually watching the Super Bowl on television. And interesting to see just how many car ads were featured in the broadcast. They absolutely dominated.
The challenge is, how do you stand out as a car in that environment, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so crowded. I mean, yeah. It's not like that in Australia, is it, in terms of... I know there is a lot of car advertising, yeah, but yeah, it's not as crowded as that.
I guess, it, you know, it's such a big event that, yeah, you have to be there, don't you?
So, well, yeah. And I think what's important to point out with this one is not only was it Clint, but it was a very somber ad from a car ad. All the others were, look at this dog, it's a Star Wars reference. Look at this,
It was almost secondary that it was about Chrysler, about...
Yeah, so it's picked up some controversy as being very, very much a big favour for the president
I actually wrote it down, it's more like a party political broadcast, wasn't it? I mean, but to be honest, I think they got... Yeah, if you want to stand out and make an impact, that was perfect. It was beautifully shot. It was, you know, and knowing what the Americans are like, and it's all about passion and what have you. That was really playing to the heart of, you know.
And it felt very similar to I think last year, maybe the year before, they did a similar thing with, was it Eminem the year before? I think.
So it's been about building Detroit up again, and God knows what. So look, I personally think it. As you say, when you look at some of the other car ads, it really stood out as being something special.
But from a media perspective, I mean, it cost $3.5 million mm-hmm. for a 30-second spot around the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. That's just media. Yeah. Not
what do you reckon the KPIs for that ad were?
Well, this is my point. I mean, how do you get media value after spending $3.5 million for media alone? Who do you think's done the best?
Well, the reality is you've got, 114 million people watching, so... A lot of people bloody saw that ad, and that's, you know, if you like, the reason you're in the Super Bowl is because you want to make a statement. So whether you can sit back and say, well, how much for their total yearly budget have they just blown on, that ad is debatable, of course.
If you wanted to make a statement in Australia, what event would it be? Because it's no single thing, is it? You know, first day of the Ashes.
Yeah, look, it's
first
it's
series return of Pack to the Rafters.
Well, for all your listeners in Melbourne, it would be about the AFL Grand Final, wouldn't it? But look, the truth is, in this country, in any other country, you don't have a big event like you do in the US with the Super Bowl and, you know, World Series baseball and all that sort of thing. It's quite unique in that sense. But it's interesting, I was reading something before, you know, the Super Bowl about how they were saying this was going to be the watershed year for social media as far as, you know, Super Bowl was concerned, and how advertisers actually take their 30-second ad or whatever and extend it into social messaging. So you said that got 4 million hits so far,
yes.
Yeah. So again, it really needs to act as, well, you know, that was the base for what we're going to do. It's what you do underneath it. It's where the important marketing and media sort of savvy comes into it. So great, have this ad there, but hopefully it's not going to stop there. That message is going to continue. So again, you know, building Detroit, the whole sort of experience there. There's a whole lot of extra content, story, brand stories you can tell underneath that, which can be fed into different areas. So potentially that's how you'd be looking at something like that. Mm.
Now, Toyota Camry had a few outings, some better than others. Let's have a listen to the best.
After reinventing the Toyota Camry, we decided to keep reinventing. This is the reinvented couch. It also comes in mail. This is the reinvented police officer. He's also a masseuse. This is the reinvented baby. It doesn't poop. It is also a time machine. The reinvented DMV. It's a little nicer.
Next!
The reinvented blender. It plays Lionel Richie. The reinvented plant. It fights crime. Reinvented curtains. They are made of pizza. This is reinvented rain. It makes you skinny. And this is the reinvented Toyota Camry, available with everything you could possibly want. You're welcome.
Also coming out of the Super Bowl was an ad for Danone Yogurt's brand Oikos. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Oikos?
Oikos?
I'd have gone for Oikos.
Oikos, okay. Let's take a listen to the soundtrack. Okay, Okay. Now let's take a listen to Australian rock band John Butler Trio's 2003 song, Zebra. Similar enough, both band and Yogurt were made aware of the aping courtesy of angry John Butler fans via social media during the game. Since then, John Butler put in a query of what he could do legally, and Denon since made a statement on their Facebook. A question about the music in our Super Bowl commercial has been brought to our attention. We are working to fully understand and address the situation. We apologize for any concerns this has caused John Butler Trio's band members and fans.
And I guess they're probably going to write them a big check.
Yeah, I imagine so. What happens in that situation? I imagine the ad has gone out to, and in this case, I can't explain it, but I mean, are Denon responsible for a soundtrack, or?
I mean, in the end, I guess the bill will go to Denon, but presumably they'll be having conversations with their agency, etc. And I think it started off as a piece of user generated content in the first place. It's the perils of user generated content.
There's not a giant client that's going to suffer at the hands of Denon. They're not going to.
This is a bit of a win win for John Butler, isn't it? Because all of a sudden he's in the news again, so people are going back listening to the original song and probably downloading that and blah blah blah. It's, again, as we say, how social media is driving these conversations and these debates, etc.
So, indeed, there was a point made that there weren't that many views of Zebra, which was a 2003 pre-YouTube song, until February 6th, and then boom. It's increased. Yeah. So Denon will actually be getting very angry at a university student named Jonah Gill Neufeld, who came up with the music. He'll be burying this job on his LinkedIn, I imagine. And the director was also a fellow student of his, Remy Newmark, possibly the youngest director of a Super Bowl ad.
Not that he'll ever get to direct a single one.
No.
Next, The Week in Telly.
When Channel 9 announced it would go head-to-head with 10's Biggest Loser, with new weight loss show Excess Baggage, it seemed like risky business. In just its second week of the show, stripped across the week in the 7 p.m. time slot, Excess Baggage has been dumped to digital channel Go at 6:30. So, Tim, the Biggest Loser rates well. Was this certain death by 9?
Oh, it's so easy to be, you know, wise after the event, isn't it? And what we saw, you know, don't forget that last year 9 took on 10 with The Block, and that was after 10 had announced the renovators. Now, obviously, that was a new format as well, so it wasn't quite the same. Although you say new, it was just MasterChef. But as I think Colin put it before, it was running with lamps.
Running with lamps.
but you know, they took them on and won with that one. They just said, okay, we're going to go for it. You know, we're going to strip. We're going to be brave, and they made it work. So it wasn't a crazy thing to do. I think probably what 10 were wise to do was to get to air as early as possible this year, way before the ratings started, because, you know, as we talk, the official ratings period still hasn't begun. So they established the audience, and it was an established show, and it, you know, still seems to be growing. So, you know, that was a gap.
Can I just say, I think the only similarity between those two shows is that they feature large people. The truth is,
and their weight loss journey.
The truth is, you know, Excess Baggage was all about fat celebrities, and Biggest Loser at least tries to sort of say it's about health, it's about blah blah blah. So they're very different starting points, I think, anyway. And what you were saying about The Block is true, but again, the difference there was that The Block was an established brand, as is Biggest Loser, and I think that's the difference again. At the end of the day, people probably had more faith in what The Biggest Loser was all about rather than this, you know, people, again, you know, viewers are smart. They know when something's a copycat and when something's just there for the sake of it. There was no real interest. The so-called celebrities are, you know, who cares?
Would you have preferred to see 9 stick with it for a couple more weeks yet? Because it was quite a quick move. I mean, they axed this even more quickly than Ben Elton. You know, at least Ben Elton made it till nearly the end of February last year.
Again, you know, we were talking before about how quickly networks will react to Twitter or social media, sort of blah, blah. How long can you let something continue to run? Because the truth is, it wasn't going to pick up. You know, I think that was obvious that it wasn't going to gain audience. So you don't keep it there thinking, well, maybe people are soon going to get the idea of what this program's about and buy into it.
Especially before the official ratings period begins.
Yeah. So I'm not surprised that they've done it. But, it's interesting. We were at the Channel 9 launch, before Christmas, et cetera. And we walked away from there saying, that could have been Channel 10's launch a few years ago. It was, the way they talk and the way they're sort of setting things up. And that's not a criticism at all of what they were doing. But again, that's where Warburton's been smart, where he's come back, he's gone into 10 and said, right, we're going to go back to what we, we're the ones who started this. We're the ones who started the 7 o'clock strip. We're the ones who did blah, blah, blah. So he went back to what 10 were originally strong at doing, putting it in that time slot. And I think that made sense.
Now, 10 have gone early this year. Do you think they've got enough programming to see them out through the year?
Yeah, look, that's always the big debate. I think, 10 always struggle as they get towards the back end of the year, et cetera, which is why it's always important they get off to a strong start to the year. But, look, I know that they're confident that they've got things, which will sit them through to the end of the year. It makes sense. Super Sunday appears to be working well for them.
So I was surprised because pretty much everything apart from the project is rated at the right side of a million.
Yeah.
And not just in the first week.
But interesting with the project in Melbourne, it's getting pretty close to the 7's ratings as well. So it's, it will settle down. It will do okay there. And that I think anyway. But I think it's sensible. This is the thing about Warburton. He will shake things up. And again, I guess the difference with a network like 10 and 9 or 7 even, 10 have been prepared to let things bed in and give them a chance to actually, have a life. And that's paid off. The reality of the commercial world these days, I think, 10 can't afford to sit back and let things slip. But at the same time, I think, I don't think they're as knee-jerk as 9 are. And you're right, you're going into the rating period now. They wanted to get something back in there which was going to start.
And in non-peak, we've got 9 obviously just launching Mornings with Sonia Kruger, mm-hmm. doing something just over 100,000 initially. Mm-hmm. Clearly, they want a bigger audience than that. Can you afford a bit more time out of peak to let something settle in?
Yeah.
And what about Breakfast for 10, which launches in a few weeks? Mm. What are your senses on what that's going to do to the market?
It's an interesting one. I don't know. I think it needs to be different. Otherwise, why are you going to switch over and watch it? I mean, again, people are either entrenched with the Today Show or Sunrise, etc. And I think, in the same way that a project had to create a different space and give a different audience a reason to watch, Breakfast has to do the same thing.
And a difference, it strikes me, could well be Paul Henry. I mean, I'll be tuning in.
Well, I mean, but again, it sounds like you either love him or hate him as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But look, I would love to have seen something, really different, like The Big Breakfast was in the UK, where that was so outrageously different than it was.
So it's worth explaining that format for people who didn't get to see it.
Okay, I mean, The Big Breakfast in the UK was, when it first started, it was hosted by Paula Yates, I think it was, and she used to interview people in the bed. And it was basically a big house, and they did the show from a house. And it was wacky. It was just really different. And it brought a young audience into Breakfast TV who traditionally weren't watching at that time of the day. And it certainly produced some big stars in the UK, like Johnny Vaughan and
Denise Van Houten,
et cetera.
And Chris Evans, of course.
And Chris Evans and that as well. So it in the same way, you could argue, the project broke the mold as far as what news meant. Big Breakfast did that in the UK as far as what Breakfast TV could be.
And it has been reported in the last few days that it might return.
For the Olympics, yeah. I was listening to a podcast with Johnny Vaughan yesterday, actually, and he said if they ask him to do it, he'll do it.
I'm just rounding up the week's ratings. 7's My Kitchen Rules won every night it's gone out, averaging around 1.5 million. And Tuesday peaked at 2 million.
Do you know, I spoke to someone from a rival network who predicted it would grow some more, which is interesting when a rival network says that.
Yeah, really impressive. Bob, just quickly, your TV watching habits? What are your favourite shows?
I think Homeland's fantastic. Really enjoying that.
Yes, I wish it would speed up a little bit, though.
See, you just want things to happen straight away.
Absolutely.
I quite like that, the fact that it's building in that as well. So I think that's good quality TV. Do you know, I hate to say this, but I'm watching more and more things on YouTube and sort of going out and finding my own, content, if you like. I think, I think that's a classic example of someone, as old as me, is going away and finding things to watch when I want to watch.
And that's a similar flavour to Homeland, I think, certainly in the way it's been promoted, Revenge on Seven. How do you think that's going to do?
There's not been as much, but I don't think there's been as much hype about that.
I tell you what, it depends
Homeland.
Where you are, because I found that if you go to the cinema, there's a lot of impact there.
Right,
you
really,
know, there was pretty much not a single screening I saw over the Christmas period.
Right.
Went to the cinema quite a lot where it wasn't on. So they obviously quite a big cinema buyer.
Absolutely. No, look, I think there are some good quality drama shows around at the moment or coming, and I think that's good to get back to good solid drama. Comedy is good. There's some good new comedy things. Modern Family continues to do well, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, how Foxtel continue to sort of expand their new programs, et cetera, and how they're going to grow there. So, yeah, I think there's going to be some interesting things to watch again this year.
Next, the ABCs of papers and magazines.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan Micro Citizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
Today sees the release of the six-month figures for newspapers and magazines. Tim, what do you make of the magazines' results? What are the highlights and lowlights?
So this comes with the caveat that we get these results under embargo. So although we record this on a Thursday, we'll just be writing about it on a Friday, as most people listen to the podcast. So we've had just minutes to look at these numbers. So these are really very just first impressions. First thoughts for me, I'd love to know what on earth has happened with FHM. Down 48%. Now, this is the year-on-year figure. So the last 6 months of 2011 compared to the last 6 months of 2010, circulation fell from just over 50,000 to about 26,000. Now, that's astonishing. Literally, as we came out of the door to record this, the press release came in from ACP with, you know, their comments on how everything had done. So I did a quick, and it's a long press release, so quick fine text on FHM. Not a mention of FHM at all. So ACP has sort of looked away. So you wonder how long that magazine can stand on its own. It says something about the men's sector. So that's one. And then just a couple of other things I noticed. MasterChef, down 33%. MasterChef magazine, which is a News Life Media magazine, which is the News Limited magazine arm. So that was down from about 150,000 to 100,000. Now, I suspect that might turn out to be to do with comparing periods when the show was on air last time. So that might, you know, that may not be as dramatic as it sounds. And then just a couple of other ones that were biggish falls. One from PacMags, Prevention, was actually down about 16%. And then also from ACP, Cosmo was down about 16%. And a couple of winners, Frankie was up about 14%, you know, which is great if you're a sort of twee, latte drinking, milk crate sitting hipsterette.
No, it really is great news. I couldn't agree.
and another one up quite well for News Life Media was Donna Hay, up 13%. So those are just a few first thoughts from magazines, and you know, do also look on Umbrella, because by the time Friday comes, there'll be more there. Bob, any thoughts? Is it just the lads mag sector generally? Is that why we saw that drama for FHM?
I think it is. I think, you know, you've seen over the past years that the interest in that space has changed, and I don't, you know, the lads culture isn't as great now as it once was. So I mean, that's a big drop.
And something again we were talking just before we went on air is just that question of, you know, are lads actually getting something from internet, and possibly even internet porn that they used to get from their lads mags?
Yeah, look, I think it's all those things. It's just, I you know, there was a culture where that type of magazine actually meant something, and it was all part of the hype behind, you know, being a bloke and being a lad, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it's the same world anymore. So I think, you know, those type of magazines need to reinvent themselves, decide what they want to be. And obviously there's going to be some hard decisions made behind that particular title.
It's just worth adding there that I did put the question to Deborah Thomas at ACP about FHM, and asked her, would it close? And she said, absolutely no. No changes happening at FHM for the foreseeable future. But do you think FHM will have to fold, Bob?
Oh, look, it's, you know, not for me to say, but I mean, you know, you can look at those, you know, maybe they will change the number of publications across the year, something like that. Who knows?
But yes. Would you advise your clients to go in there? Is it worthwhile? It
comes down, you know, I guess as I was saying before, you know, what is a good audience these days? It comes down to who you want to talk to. I mean, 25,000 is probably still more than you can get in you know, various other things. So if you've got a particular audience that you want to talk to who are interested in, you know, boobs and blah, 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 then that's going to be a place to find it.
So where
but of course, it's got to be costed in a way that's going to be appropriate to that as well. And that where it becomes a business decision as to whether that's viable to continue.
And are there sectors where magazines can yet see some growth? Are there places that you would see yourself advising your clients to invest in?
Look, magazines still important. You know, I think the weeklies have kind of, you know, reached a level now where there's not a great deal of change, etc. You know, celebrity, you know, cooking, etc., travel, luxury, there are still areas which I think are important. So, but, you know, I think it's interesting, the world of magazines, you know, we talk about how, you know, media's evolving. You know, magazines at the moment and living online and apps and things like that, there's still a lot of work to be done in the background as far as bringing that to life and making it a more real, you know, offering in that as well.
So. Now, Robin, newspapers obviously come out a bit more regularly, but there's another set of newspaper numbers as well, which you took a glance
at. Yeah, I've had a quick look. And it seems to me that at first glance that the winner by some margin is the Daily Telegraph.
In Sydney.
So the week Monday to Friday edition of Daily Telegraph was stable. Sunday Telegraph up at 2.12%. Saturday Daily Telegraph up 3%. So a really good performance from that newspaper.
And it says something about newspapers that being up 2 or 3% is a massive result, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess the losers, if you could call them that, Sydney Morning Herald, the week edition down 2.7%, the Saturday edition down 0.27%, so stable. The Age down 3.5%. So there is a lot of gloom there, but the guys at the Telegraph will be happy, I think.
Bob, do you still read a print edition of a newspaper every day?
I'd read the Thin Review, yeah.
And what's your routine? First thing in each day?
Yeah, so in the morning when I come into the office, I read the Thin Review. But look, I think, you know, the reality is, again, you know, I come into work in the morning and people are sitting there with their iPads and they are reading the paper on the iPad. And this is the whole thing about the new measurement systems coming in, et cetera. You know, you have to be, you know, people have to be smarter in understanding how people are reading newspapers these days. And that's why, you know, we look at these numbers and obviously, again, benchmark, et cetera, et cetera. But we, as you know, we've been asking for more detailed information about readership and how people are reading it, where they're reading it. And fortunately, they seem to be moving in the right direction as far as that's concerned. But as I say, you know, there has to be more accountability and understanding of how people are reading the masthead. And
Well, that is all we have time for today. Thank you very much to Bob.
My pleasure. Thank you.
To Robin.
Cheers, Tim.
And Colin.
Thank you, Tim.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded in the studios of CBS Interactive. See you next week. Toodle pip.